for Leologos Radio, the weekly radio program featuring the best in Greek music and culture, plus interviews with Greek and international newsmakers. Leologos Radio with Michael Nevaralekis begins now.
Στα μάτια μου μπροστά χίλιους όρκους πήρα πίσω και τον όνομα να σ' αγαπήσω τα χάσα, μου ήρθε ξαφνικά. Άρχισες και να μου λείπεις, το τηλέφωνο με ζήτης, χάνομαι όταν κλείνεις ξαφνικά. Το μυαλό μου μηδενίζω και με σένα το γεμίζω, πόσο υπερβάλλω ξαφνικά. Έτσι ξαφνικά, έτσι ξαφνικά, όπως μπήκε στη ζωή μου θα φοβάμαι μη σε χάσω ξαφνικά. Έτσι ξαφνικά μου πιάσε το χέρι. Έχεις μια ματιά που με αφοπλίζει. Έτσι ξαφνικά η ζωή μου αξίζει. Ερώτας το βλέπω είσαι, πυροτέχνημα που ήρθε και έσκασε στα μάτια μου μπροστά. Χίλιους όρκους πήρα πίσω και τολμώ να σ' αγαπήσω, τα χάσα, μου ήρθε ξαφνικά. Άρχισες και να μου λείπεις, το τηλέφωνο με ζήτης, χάνομαι όταν κλείνεις ξαφνικά. Το μυαλό μου μηδενίζω και με σένα το γεμίζω, πόσο υπερβάλλω ξαφνικά. Έτσι ξαφνικά, έτσι ξαφνικά, όπως μπήκε στη ζωή μου θα φοβάμαι μη σε χάσω ξαφνικά. Έτσι ξαφνικά, έτσι ξαφνικά, όπως μπήκε στη ζωή μου θα φοβάμαι μη σε χάσω. Έτσι ξαφνικά. Έτσι ξαφνικά.
This is the Alaros Radio, the worldwide Greek radio program, which is heard globally on 25 radio stations across 5 countries, 4 continents, and online. My name is Michael Nevradakis, and on today's broadcast, we have a last-minute change to our schedule, as we will be featuring an extremely timely interview with Turkish journalist Gürkan Özturan, who is returning to our program today and who will share with us his insights and analysis as to current events in Turkey, including the country's upcoming constitutional referendum and other developments, which of course are also quite relevant to Greece and to Europe more broadly. Our originally scheduled interview, part one of our discussion with Greek economist and analyst Spiros Lavdiotis, will follow on our next English language broadcast right after Easter. Coming up now here on the Alaros Radio, it's the Alaros interview series for this week and our discussion with Turkish journalist Gürkan Özturan. The Diálogos Interview Series, our weekly segment featuring interviews on matters pertaining to Greece and the worldwide Greek community, coming up next here on Diálogos Radio. Joining us today on the Alaros Radio for this week's edition of the Alaros Interview Series is Turkish journalist Gürkan Özturan, who will speak to us about all of the latest developments coming out of Turkey. And Gürkan, thank you for joining us once again on our program.
Well, thank you for having me, and it feels great to be 1 hour closer to the Western world again.
All right, so let's begin by discussing the upcoming Turkish constitutional referendum. What are the changes which are being placed before the electorate?
Well, on the April 16, Turkish people will be voting on a new constitutional referendum. And this constitutional referendum is actually a result of 18 different clauses that have passed in the parliamentary vote, but they have failed to amend these constitutional clauses in the parliament, which needed 367 votes, but they failed much below it. And approximately 330 votes have been cast for each and every one of them. So this meant that we were to have a referendum on them. But the president and the government had announced that even though it had passed 367, it would still be taken to a referendum. So what is in this constitutional referendum? Basically, this has been declared as a change of regime by the opposition parties in Turkey. When I say opposition, actually this does not cover all the parties, because the far-right Nationalist Movement Party, which is the fourth biggest parliamentary party at the moment, is in an alliance with the governing AK Party. And this has caused a divide in their voter base, of course. But what is there in the constitutional referendum? Well, there is one clause that I actually personally support, which is dropping the age of getting elected to 18. I actually agree with the governing party that the age of getting elected into the parliament should also be dropped from 25 to 18. If you're able to vote, you should be able to get elected. But apart from that, there are some structural changes to the constitution and the system of governance in the country. So the accusation from the opposition is that this is a change of regime, but the government says this is not a change of regime, but only the governance style in Turkey. First of all, there is a very basic change in the structure of the judicial body. The judicial body will be appointed directly by a good majority of the members of judicial body will be appointed directly by the president, and the remaining will be appointed by the parliament, which will again be from the same party as the governing president. The president will be the leader of the government and the leader of the country, and he will be directly elected, and he will appoint all the ministers. There is a problem in that, because in the parliamentary system, a majority of the ministers were being actually first elected into the parliament, and from among the members of parliament, they would be selected by the leader of whoever is going to form the coalition or form the government. The president previously gave the mandate to one person to form the government, and this person would prepare a list of the cabinet, and this would be taken to a vote of confidence. But in the system that is being proposed, the president will be appointing ministers depending on his will, and the number of ministers are not actually declared. There can be as many ministers as the president likes, and there can be as many vice presidents as the president likes. And this actually presents a problem, especially in the days when the Azerbaijani president has appointed his wife as vice president, and the Turkish president has actually always had his daughter as his advisor, who is getting paid for advising her father. And then there is another case that the vote of no confidence in the parliament, so the parliamentary power of voting a government down, is being taken away from the parliament, and the will of the people that is represented in the parliament is being taken away. So there is going to be no parliamentary oversight over the power of the president, and the parliament actually will become obsolete. There will only be a duty of preparing and drafting laws, and not laws even, just the proposals and the drafts, and these will be put onto a vote, and the president will have a right to say yes or no, to approve or reject these proposals. Previously, again, the president would be the one to approve of or reject these proposals, but at least it would be the government, it would be the parliament and the government that would in fact be responsible for creation of the new laws. It's claimed that there is no abolition of the parliament in the new constitution, but the opposition parties, the CHP and the HDP, they are saying that the new president will actually be responsible in approving the parliament's position. That let's assume that in an election, the president and the parliament, who are going to be voted in the same day, are actually from different parties. Let's say the president is from party A and the parliament majority is from party B. The president, as the directly elected leader of the government, will have a possibility to say, I do not like the constitution of this parliament, so let's renew the elections for the parliament, not for the president. And this is presenting a problem because, as we remember from last year, or the year before, in fact, in 2015, after June elections, the President Erdogan had said that he does not think that the nation has given the right choice, and the nation should repeat their vote until the correct one comes out of it, when his party had lost the parliamentary majority to form a single party government. This was the case. And for more than 3 months, the government talks have failed to reach a consensus where a proper government would be formed. And eventually we had to have another snap elections on November 1st, 2015, where his party had received again half of the vote. And then there is another crucial element of this constitutional referendum, which says that the president will not be answering to judiciary even after his term. So the president cannot be put on trial, although the governing party says that the president will be able to be put on trial after two-thirds of the parliament says that the president should be put on trial. And only after that the president would be answering to judiciary. Currently, at the proposed system, I do not really see the presence of checks and balances, which are the essence of democratic governance. And I do not see that it is actually representing the will of the nation, but the biggest majority. So I think we can summarize the constitutional referendum in these, but there are 18 clauses, in fact.
So far, what are the indications regarding the potential result of the upcoming referendum and the mood of the public in Turkey leading up to the referendum?
Well, there is actually a very varied reactions towards the referendum. One of the sentiments in the street is that there is a great level of listlessness regarding the referendum, that the majority of the people that I see around are not really enthusiastic or really passionate about the referendum. I remember in the previous years, whenever there was going to be a kind of election or a referendum, especially on the governing party's side, there would be millions of people on the streets, passionate and joyful about the upcoming elections or the referendum. They would have hopes and dreams about the afterwards of the election. But currently, what I see is there are about quite strongly supportive of the constitutional referendum, but they do not seem as passionate. And when I look at the political rallies in this in various cities, again I can say that there is a lack of passion in the supporters of the governing party. Even though there are still fanatical support in some cases, but another thing I see is that there is a great level of tension on the streets. There are only yes campaigns all around, only in certain districts and certain places. There are a few no campaigns going on and no posters available, but majority of the country is actually covered in yes, yes, yes slogans all around. And there has been announced a report by the main opposition party, CHP, last week, which has reported 143 attacks against no campaigners, and they have likened this situation to the military coup, to the junta of 1980s, where the previous constitution of Turkey was drafted. So I can say that either there is listlessness or tension on the street, but coming up to the referendum, I think this tension is being lifted gradually, as people are becoming more and more sure of their vote.
We are on the air with Turkish journalist Gürkan Özturan here on the Dialogos Radio in the Dialogos interview series. What do you believe Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan is ultimately trying to achieve by holding this referendum?
I think even though he seems to be the leader of this constitutional referendum, I think this was the inevitable case. When the third biggest political party in Turkey, the HDP, the Kurdish party, which stands for People's Democratic Party, has passed the 10% election threshold. 10% election threshold currently presents as the world record holder in the world. Turkey has the highest election threshold in the all around the world, and this was brought as mechanism to prevent ethnic parties from getting into the parliament and people to be forced to vote for strategic parties in order for their vote to be counted in the parliament. So seeing that in June 2015 elections and November 2015 elections, this election threshold has been obsolete in terms of preventing democratic parties or minority parties or ethnic parties, etc. I think this constitutional referendum has been prepared in a way not only for the one person to become the president, the ultimate president, but also to prevent any other future possibility of challenges to the essence of the system itself.
How has Erdogan consolidated power and authority in Turkey since last summer's coup attempt, in your view?
Well, I think in order for seeing what kind of methods have been applied to consolidate power and authority, we might need to go a bit further than last summer, because I think it has a history more than a decade long. But if we specifically focus on what has happened since summer, I can say the first thing that comes to my mind is one of the first things that has happened right after the coup attempt, is that a state of emergency has been announced. And on July 22nd, Turkish government has declared state of emergency, which basically is almost martial law without the military itself. Of course, in the Kurdish cities, this has been more violent than in the West, and the government has announced that it would be their lives, people's lives would be no different than before, and that state of emergency would only mean that there would be peaceful transition towards regular days being spent. But more than 121,000 people have been dismissed from their duties, from their jobs. State officers, policemen, teachers, lawyers, and judges, prosecutors, all kinds of professions, people have been dismissed from their work, and more than 40,000 people have been arrested in this period. About 200 media outlets have been shut down, and Turkey is preserving its position as the top jailer of journalists in the world, has imprisoned more than 140 journalists. And hundreds of NGOs have been declared as apparatus of terrorism, and they have been shut down, including the one that I have been working for. So given all these things, I think it has not been so hard to consolidate power and authorities since the coup attempt. But I think this also presents as a big problem that there are some new allies coming into play, and this consolidation might not last as much as it seems.
So opening up quite a few issues here, and of course there's been some changes that have been afoot in Turkey, as you mentioned, even before the referendum. One example is the reforms to the education system and the introduction of a more conservative, if you will, curriculum. What have these changes consisted of?
Well, the Turkish education system actually is a very interesting one, because since my childhood, I can remember that almost every year there has been major changes into the educational system. But this time it sounds definitely more conservative than before, but it has been becoming this over the years. It is not something that has happened overnight or over the course of 6 months or a year even. But with the new one, the removal of evolution theory seems to be the most striking outcome. And then there is the inclusion of more extensive religious classes, and then the addition of July 15th's unsuccessful coup attempt in the social history classes. But what the new educational curriculum suggests, according to the Ministry of National Education, is that it is going to present the young pupils with a national ideology. And from the national educational curriculum, it has been the parts regarding the foundation of the republic, the early republican years, have been presented as less significant, while transition to multi-party democracy, which is about center-right political movements establishment in Turkey, is now becoming more and more significant in the curriculum. And inclusion of democratization, the supposedly democratization of the educational system, the most recent trend, which is the conservative center-right ideology, is now being presented to the children as the way to go. And with the inclusion of the July 15 coup attempt in social history, it has also been interpreted as that the Turkish educational system from now on will focus on education of values instead of just facts. And I would like to also remind in this question that in the previous years, it has been suggested by, I believe it was the president or someone in the government, that why do people argue about religion classes? Why not about physics or mathematics? They are just as important. I guess that was the reference regarding the discussions over conservative educational curriculum.
From what I understand, certain restrictions continue to be in place against Turkish academics, and there have been instances of resistance on the part of some academics in response to these restrictions. Tell us some more about what has been happening.
To begin with, more than a dozen universities have been shut down in Turkey, and over 1,000 academics have been dismissed as well as part of the purge after the July 15 unsuccessful coup attempt. And although in the immediate aftermath of the coup, it has been suggested that the groups that are deemed as responsible for the coup, meaning the former allies of President Erdogan, the Gulen movement, the academics or social officers, state officers related to this movement would be dismissed and they would be charged with terrorism, etc. It has very rapidly turned into a political witch hunt to combine all the political opponents of President Erdogan or the AK Party. And as part of this, hundreds of academics have been dismissed from their positions, all valuable professors and researchers. But as you have mentioned, there has been quite many cases of reactions and resistance against these dismissals. For example, in the Ankara University, professors tried to enter the campus and the police has stopped them from entering the campus even. So they have taken off their academic robes and laid them in front of the policemen where the police have actually stepped over them. So that was a significant move. This has shown what kind of an attitude our state currently has when it comes to academia and free thought and research. But I can proudly speak of my home university, the Bosphorus University. Students have actually started a resistance stand in support of the dismissed academics on the campus. For the first time in the last so many years, and some professors from Boğaziçi University have also been dismissed from their duties. In fact, not exactly dismissed, but the university tried to renew their contracts because they are foreign professors. But the Supreme Board of Higher Education has refused to renew their contracts, so they have lost their jobs at the university. But their students saying that these professors have been all embracing and all welcoming, they have started a tent where they teach courses willingly and freely to all the students, and they invite everyone to come together and listen to the lectures, and they have started a series of events which are quite inspirational. And I have personally visited this tent a couple of times, and I will visit them again. So street academia kind of attitudes are rising at the moment. It is becoming more and more common to see in Turkey that some of the dismissed academics set up street academia lectures, and they just talk to the people who are interested in their topics, and they just inform the society. They're actually establishing bigger connections, more connections to the society and the streets. So the tent lectures, I believe, are going to cause some very deep social change in the future in Turkey, as long as they can persist in their presence.
This is the Alawis Radio. We will return after a short break.
Σα αεροδρόμια, λιμάνια και σε πιάτσες. Για να έρθω να σε δω, συνάντησα του κόσμου τις περίεργες τις φάτσες. Και εσύ μία σημαία δε σηκώνει στο μπαλκόνι να γράφεις αγαπώ, αφού το ξέρεις η καρδούλα μου ματώνει. Σ' αυτό το γαλαξία το μόνο που έχει αξία είναι να αγαπάς. Με ψέματα ράδα, με και σαν τη λαμπάδα, με ρίχνεις το κεάδα κι όλο με τυραννάς. Σ' αυτό το γαλαξία το μόνο που έχει αξία είναι να αγαπάς. Με ψέματα στο και άνα κι όλα
ψάχνω να σε βρω στα πιο απίθανα σημεία του πλανήτη. Για πάρτι σου εγώ ξυπόλυτη γυρίζω μες στο χρόνο τον αλήτη. Μα πες μου στο φινάλε που το πας, θέλω να ξέρω. Αρκεί να μ' αγαπάς κι εγώ τα αστέρια του ουρανού στη γη θα φέρω.
Σ' αυτό το γαλαξία το μόνο που έχει αξία είναι να αγαπάς. Με ψέματα ράδα, με και σαν τη λαμπάδα, με ρίχνει στο κέντρο.
We are speaking with Turkish journalist Gürkan Özturan here on Diálogos Radio in the Diálogos interview series. You write for what could be described as an alternative news outlet. What are the challenges that you face in doing your job as a journalist in Turkey today? And how has press freedom been challenged in the past year and especially since the coup attempt?
Well, to begin with, I actually would call it as a citizen journalism platform rather than alternative news because of the negative connotations of alternative in the past year, especially after the announcing of post-truth age. But, of course, focusing on news is quite a bit of a task these days, and especially the way to avoid propaganda is another thing. What we are trying to do as Dokuz8 news agency is that we try to focus on code of ethics and ethics of journalism, and we try to focus on the news itself, naked truth itself, and the news that are being neglected by the conventional media. We try to focus on things that matter to the society, that we think are crucial to the progress of the society. And we try to present this in a way that is as basic as possible so that it gets understood and there is no manipulation. Each reader should be able to form their opinion about this. And as I have stated earlier, we put journalism ethics at the very core of what we do. And we try to be a source of verified, reliable, and accurate information for the needs of the society. And in order to check what we are doing, we have actually conducted a social media perception research, and we have found out that we are actually doing quite a good job when it comes to news in Turkey. That our followers are actually from various backgrounds, various political, ethnic, religious, etc. Kind of backgrounds. They do not come from one specific area. So it is not a partisan kind of media, but it's a news source that, if I may say, all sides can actually trust and perceive as reliable.
What are the challenges and the obstacles that opposition parties in Turkey are presently facing? For instance, from what I understand, the co-leader of the HDP, which is the third largest party in Turkey, has been imprisoned and has begun a hunger strike. What has been going on with the Turkish opposition?
Well, the Turkish opposition is as divided as pieces of a mosaic, even though they make up one big piece of opposition. even though as the opposition, if they were united, they would be the biggest form of political influence. They are completely divided and in small pieces. Even at the time of the referendum, when the sides are so clear that there are only two sides to be voted for, each side actually is focusing on their electorate, and they are trying to keep their voter base intact. And before that, of course, I would like to mention the HDP co-leaders, both of them in prison, and more than 10 deputies of HDP in prison, and dozens of HDP municipalities have been taken over. Trustee mayors have been appointed in their places. So political imprisonment definitely is an obstacle across the Turkish political opposition parties. So what happens when the road to political solution is blocked by the government? Unfortunately, this question has a very dark answer, which I'm trying not to even think of, because for years in Turkish parliament, they have been saying that the people fighting in the mountains should come down to the valleys and they should conduct politics, they should be involved in political solutions, and they should be actually willing to head for a peaceful resolution of the ethnic problems, ethnic tensions in Turkey. But unfair election atmosphere, use of state resources by the governing party for the governing party, and the system favoring the governing or the winning party, and this party going out of line to prevent these other smaller parties from coming up with their solution proposals, from naming their demands in the parliament. This does not seem like it is going to go for a very long time, and definitely not for a peaceful future. And on the other hand, there is the main opposition CHP, the Republican People's Party, that is unable to adapt to the 21st century politics and focus on the individual and group rights. So that is a whole another discussion, but I believe what we lack in Turkey is, in fact, liberal and progressive parties that are able to address to the needs of the society from all kinds of backgrounds, regardless of ethnic, religious, or lifestyle differences.
Tayyip Erdogan seems to have opened up recently to certain segments of the Kurdish population, asking for their support in the upcoming referendum. How is Erdogan potentially playing various Kurdish factions against each other, and how do you believe Erdogan would respond to the potential partitioning of Syria and Iraq and the creation of a Kurdish state?
Well, in Turkey, if a political party wants to pass any kind of proposal at this point, I believe they would need the Kurdish vote. Without the Kurdish vote, it seems unlikely. For example, if we focus on the upcoming referendum, the yes vote definitely needs the support of the Kurds, or at least the absolute silence of the Kurds. In 2010, when the Kurdish party had announced that they would not participate in the referendum because this does not present any kind of viable alternative for the future of the Kurdish population, this has actually been perceived as a silent approval of the constitutional referendum, and it had passed with flying numbers, because in the West, the alliance of the right-wing parties allowed this to happen. So recently, the northern Iraqi Kurdish leader Barzani had been invited to lure in the Kurdish vote, in fact. And over the years, I think this has been a strategy of the Turkish state to divide the Kurdish population, and depending on the leadership of each side, to lure in some of the Kurdish supporters so that the governing party or the governing mentality would actually get some support, and in exchange, the Kurdish leaders would be given certain benefits or advantages. So without security in the region, how could the Kurdish population actually show interest in this referendum? Seeing that saying yes would lead to a one-man system, a constitution that allows one party and one person to take over the whole of state, and on the other hand, voting for no means going back to the 1982 constitution that actually does not even refer to Kurds or other groups. and does not give does not recognize any liberal rights, and without these, the Kurdish population would not really be too inclined to show up at the on the day of the referendum. So, given that the nationalist movement party's voter base is divided, the Kurdish vote would be crucial at this point for the governing AK Party.
We are on the air with Turkish journalist Gürkan Özturan here on the Dialogos Radio in the Dialogos interview series. Let us look now at the love-hate relationship which seems to exist between Turkey and Europe. Tensions and rhetoric have flared recently between a Turkish government and the governments of Holland and Germany, and increasingly we seem to be hearing Euroskeptic rhetoric from the mouth of Tayyip Erdogan and from other members of the Turkish government, at least publicly. At the same time, there was apparently a meeting and a deal between Erdogan and German Chancellor Angela Merkel recently. Is there indeed a turn away from Europe on the part of Turkey, or is there something else that is going on?
The German Chancellor Angela Merkel has actually arrived in Turkey right before every election in Turkey, and this has been perceived as the support from Angela Merkel towards AK Party. AK Party has at first presented itself as similar to the Christian Democratic center-right parties in Europe, and Angela Merkel's CDU is the epitome of this ideology. But prior to that, I would like to mention a few things that have happened right after Turkey has had this tulip crisis with the Netherlands and the whole of Europe later on. So Prime Minister Rutte in the Netherlands has won elections. That is, congratulations there. And then it is not the national elections in Germany, but in Saarland, Merkel's CDU has also won the regional seats, the federal government. And then even in the Bulgarian elections, the center-right party, which I was not actually expecting, has made gains after the tensions with Turkey. And these seem like they're going in line with this international tension scenario. And this reminds me of the 2009 Davos World Economic Forum and the tension with Israel. If you remember, back then he was the prime minister. Prime Minister Erdogan had said 1 minute. He kept on saying 1 minute when he was denied his speech when during a discussion with Shimon Peres. But the moderator had suggested that he would shut his microphone, and this has caused a good majority of the Turkish nationalist voters to rally around their prime minister, because he was perceived as a national hero. And when I speak to some of my Dutch friends now, they say that their prime minister has stood up against Erdogan's Eurosceptical remarks and his violent and hostile minister's approach to the Netherlands. So Rutte has been declared as the champion of democratic world for some of the Dutch friends. And in a similar fashion, Angela Merkel's popularity has been increasing, I guess. So this might be the case that the European center-right is actually playing this in order to sustain their voters' support. And behind closed doors, we cannot exactly know what might be going on, because I do not think that Turkey is moving too much away from Europe or from Germany, because no matter what happens, Europe is still Turkey's biggest trade partner. And no matter what happens, Turkey is still very much in line with the European political system, even though all kinds of conservative policies are being adopted. This is actually more in line with the European style right-wing politics rather than the Middle Eastern style conservative political movements.
How has the Turkish government used the issue of the refugees and migrants coming from Syria and elsewhere in the Middle East as a weapon or as a bargaining chip of sorts against the European Union?
It is very disturbing to see the refugees and the migrants being perceived as a bargaining chip around this table. Unfortunately, both Europe and Turkey and the United States have been accusing the migrants and the refugees of being something much less than human. This unfortunately reminds me of what has what had happened in the Second World War when it came to the Jewish refugees. If you remember, PEW Research had announced some data dating back to 1930s and 40s when it came to perception of the Jewish refugees, and the numbers had not actually changed much. Only that this time it is the Syrian refugees. But the Turkish government is obviously not approaching this issue as humanely as it should. Well, first of all, Turkey has still not ratified the Convention on the Refugee Rights, that the Syrian people are not perceived as refugees in Turkey, but just stateless, just guests at the moment. And in the meantime, the European countries are also guilty of shutting the gates against the refugees. So there is a big international crisis in there. But the Turkish government has threatened Europe several times that they would unleash the refugees and open the gates and flood Europe with refugees. And they have used this to manipulate European support or to get benefits from Europe. And there had been talks of visa-free travel in exchange for keeping the refugees and accepting the refugees back in Turkey from Europe, which I believe is definitely not moral or humane. But unfortunately, this was the standard of the negotiations and the discussions between Europe and Turkey, and there are no moral or innocent sides in this discussion.
Well, Gürkan, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today here on the Diálogos Radio and the Diálogos Interview Series, and for analyzing these very important issues for us.
Well, I'm glad to be of help. Thank you so much, Mihailis.
Attention iTunes users, Diálogos Radio is now just a click away. You can now download our podcasts and listen to Diálogos Radio 24/7 anytime, anywhere. Check us out today in the iTunes podcast directory and in iTunes Radio. Follow Diálogos Radio on Facebook and Twitter and remain connected to all our latest news and updates. Check us out today at facebook.com/Diálogos Media and at twitter.com/Diálogos Media. The podcast of this week's interview with Turkish journalist Gürkan Özturan will soon be available on our website, dialogosmedia.org, in the Diálogos Radio apps for Android, Kindle, BlackBerry, and Chrome, in iTunes, TuneIn.com in the Windows Store, and in the Nobex Radio, WeCast, Player FM, Stitcher, and Podbean apps.
Μ' αγαπήσεις, βρες πως θα με κατακτήσεις που είμαι πάντα ένα παιδί. Τόλμησε να με κερδίσεις έτσι για να ανακαλύψεις τι σημαίνει ο ερωτάς μου δηλαδή. Αν δεν γεννηθείς αστέρι, η ζωή πως περιμένεις να σε ξέρει. Αν δεν γεννηθείς βοριάς, πως θα διώξεις τα σκοτάδια της σαρδιάς. Αν δεν γεννηθείς αστέρι, η ζωή πως περιμένεις να σε ξέρει. Αν δεν γεννηθείς φωτιά, πως θα μένεις να χτυπήσω σου η βραδιά. Να μ' αγαπήσεις, μήπως έτσι μ' αποκτήσεις σαν χαμένο θησαυρό. Τόλμησε να μου ζητήσεις φήμες, λόγια και εξηγήσεις που δεν βγήκα τόσα χρόνια να σε βρω. Αν
δε γεννηθείς αστέρι, ζωή πως περιμένεις να σε ξέρει. Αν δε γεννηθείς μοριάς, πως θα διώξεις τα σκοτάδια της καρδιάς. Αν δε γεννηθείς αστέρι, ζωή πως περιμένεις να σε ξέρει. Αν δε γεννηθείς φωτιά, πως θα μένεις να χτυπήσω σου η βραδιά. Αν δε γεννηθείς αστέρι, ζωή πως περιμένεις να σε ξέρει. Αν δε γεννηθείς μοριάς, πως θα διώξεις τα σκοτάδια της καρδιάς. Αν δε γεννηθείς αστέρι, ζωή πως περιμένεις να σε ξέρει. Αν δε γεννηθείς φωτιά, πως θα μένεις να χτυπήσω σου η βραδιά.
Να χαρείς τα μάτια σου, δεν δεν αντέχω να πεθαίνω μπροστά σκαλοπάτια σου. Δεν αντέχω να πεθαίνω μπροστά σκαλοπάτια σου.
Take the Dialogos Radio on the go with you with the new Dialogos Radio app for Android devices. Now you can listen live to the Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos Radio 24/7, download our podcasts, and read our latest articles all in our free Android app, available now in the Google Play Store. This is the Dialogos Radio, where today's broadcast is just about ready to come to a close. Be sure to check out our website, dialogosmedia.org, for our podcasts, show and interview archives, published articles and commentaries, and to hear our online radio station, the Dialogos Radio 24/7. We will return after Easter with more great programming, including part one of our interview with Greek economist and analyst Spiros Lavdiotis on Greece's debt, the history of austerity, and possible solutions to the crisis. For the Dialogos Radio, this is Michael Navradakis. Thank you for joining us and have a great weekend and week ahead. And for those who are celebrating, a wonderful Easter holiday.
Απρίλη μου, Απρίλη μου ξανθέ και Μάη μη ρωτάτε καρδιά μου πως αντέ. Αντέχεις μέσα στην τόση αγάπη και στις τόσες ομορφιές. Γιομίζει γειτονιά, τραγούδια και φιλιά. Την κοπελιά μου τη λένε Λενιό, την κοπελιά μου τη λένε Λενιό, κοπελιά μου τη λένε Λενιό, μα το έχω μυστικό. Αστέρι μου χλωμό, του φεγγαριού αχτίδα στο γάιτανο φρυδό. Στο γάιτανο φρυδό κρεμάστηκε η καρδιά μου σαν το πουλάκι στο ξοβεργό. Γιομίζει η γειτονιά, τραγούδια και φιλιά. Την κοπελιά μου τη λένε Λενιό, την κοπελιά μου τη λένε Λενιό, την κοπελιά μου τη λένε Λενιό, το έχω μυστικό. Λουλούδι μου, λουλούδι μυριστό και ρόδο μη ρωτάτο, στη μάνα σου θα έρθω. Στη μάνα σου, στη μάνα σου θα έρθω, να πάρω την ευχή της και το τέρι μ' αγαπώ. Γιομίζει η γειτονιά, τραγούδια και φιλιά. Την κοπελιά μου τη λένε Λενιό, την κοπελιά μου τη λένε Λενιό, την κοπελιά μου τη λένε Λενιό, μα το έχω μυστικό.